bitch.
Stop. Right on. What's up?
All right. Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. How about you, Earl?
I'm doing fine. Calvin?
I'm doing well. Finally, Friday.
Let's get right at it.
We all check that box
off.
Yeah,
let's get right at it. We've got a special guest waiting in the wings, minority leader of the Senate, Senator Agard. Good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning, Earl. I'm doing great.
It's good to finally. It's good to finally have you on the air.
I'm thrilled. I'm looking forward to our chat.
Let me ask you. You've been talking about legalizing marijuana for some time.
I have. I first introduced a bill here in Wisconsin over 10 years ago for adult use cannabis legalization and regulation. At that point, there were only a small handful of states that had actually passed that legislation. And here we are a little over a decade later, and 23 states have full adult legalization now. It is clear that the genie is out of the bottle across the nation. And that the majority party, the Republicans in Wisconsin, are completely out of touch with what it is that the good people of Wisconsin want us to do when it comes to cannabis.
You know, I have to tell you, my wife and I raised a young man who takes a lot of medications and because of his disability. And we always wanted to attempt to get medical marijuana in order to take away some of the side effects from all those pills that he was taking. And it's still amazing to me that the state of Wisconsin still doesn't allow medical marijuana. I mean, what are we doing?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question for the majority party, right? You know, I think that it is vitally important that people have access to this plant that grows out of the ground in order to provide relief to themselves and to their loved ones as well. You know, the ground does not open up and swallow people in states that have legalized for responsible adult usage. We're suffering, I think, in the Capitol building from a bit of misinformation and reefer madness. And, you know, the trends are there. Not only have other states done it, yeah, you know, just because someone's jumping off a bridge doesn't mean that you need to do it. Your dad, you understand that. But Wisconsin would be a safer place for our kids and for our communities with regulation. Prohibition didn't work with alcohol. And even in Wisconsin, it didn't work with margarine. You know, there was a period of time when you couldn't buy margarine in Wisconsin, and they used to call them oleo runs, people going over the border to other states to simply buy margarine. And it's not working with cannabis. There's a really successful illicit industry in the state of Wisconsin where people can buy cannabis. Additionally, people are driving across the border to communities in Illinois and Michigan to purchase cannabis.
And now Minnesota.
In a hot second in Minnesota, right? And we also, you know, you can drive down the streets of any city, town, village in the state of Wisconsin, and there's dispensaries selling hemp derivative products that have cannabinoids in them. And those shop owners are saying, will you please regulate us? Will you pass this bill? Because there's a lot of bad actors out there, and they want to be able to show that what they have in their shops is high quality and that people can trust them. And it's a bit like Mad Max right now.
So we've got Canada north of us as well, right? We've got a whole country that's decided to, yeah. I mean, aren't there enough studies in all these places to persuade the skeptics? First of all, we've had a couple of referendum in the state that I think are pretty conclusive, weren't they? You undoubtedly have the numbers directly in your mind, but my understanding is it's not just a majority, it's a supermajority of people in Wisconsin.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, whether it's a red county or a blue county, a red city or a blue city, just a couple of years ago, there were referendums popping up left and right around Wisconsin, and they were overwhelmingly passing. It is clear that people in Wisconsin know that prohibition is not working. And in fact, it appears as if roughly 7 out of 10 Wisconsinites support full recreational cannabis legalization with a medicinal component, and over 80% support medicinal cannabis legalization. So, you know, if any politician wins their election with an over 55% win, that's considered a mandate. So I would think 80%.
What are the arguments that can be? I mean, we've got obviously then opposition by people who are doing it more ideologically than they are factually. There must be a bunch of facts that have been compiled in these 23 states and are being compiled in this nation north of us that relate to the impact of the legalization. You know, the people who are against it must be expressing fears about what it will do, I don't know what, to highway safety or whether it's a gateway drug or, you know, all of the things that are the kind of reefer madness kinds of defenses against it, much like the people who were running around trying to be claim that teetotaling was required of all people. Shouldn't we be installing, aren't there a bunch of factual arguments that you can make that demonstrate to those people that it's foolish, that they're fighting the same war that the people who were trying to shut down all the taverns in the country were fighting?
Yeah, you make some very great points, and absolutely, there is a lot of factual evidence out there that, again, the ground does not open up and swallow the world in communities that have legal cannabis. In fact, those communities are safer for our kids, safer for our roads, safer for business owners. And it's absolutely egregious that this is yet another item on a very long list here in the state of Wisconsin of where the majority party, the Republican Party, refuses to hear the will of the people, whether it's ensuring that people have access to health care, whether it's ensuring that people have a living wage when they go to work and make profits for their bosses, whether it's protecting our air and water and land here in the state of Wisconsin, or investing in our public schools, providing child care opportunities for families and business owners so people can get back to work. So I would like to, you know, point out with optimism the fact that, you know, we have a Supreme Court here in Wisconsin that appears that it's going to be more fair and balanced to the will of the people and the actual readings of our state's constitution. And they took a case up this week in regards to whether or not representation in the state legislature is working for the people of Wisconsin, arguing that we need to fix our gerrymandering, that we need to fix our district lines. And I do believe that when our legislature will be more fair and balanced, people won't be able to hide behind their political ideologies or their big donors. They're going to have to wake up and listen to the people of Wisconsin who are asking overwhelmingly for us to legalize weed.
So let me ask you, what about the financial, you know, bounty that is at the end of it? That doesn't register at all with them?
Yeah, you know, they say, you know, one of the things, you know, I think, you know, that, you know, the majority party continues to beat a drum and say that they're more fiscally responsible than Democrats. But, you know, they're leaving over $1 billion on the table in the failure to expend health care. They've sent lots of money back to the federal government for broadband expansion. Yeah, but they are saying we shouldn't make money off of cannabis sales because they call it a gateway drug. Well, we know it's a successful illicit industry in Wisconsin. The money's going into the black market. It should be going in to our state tax dollars, and we should be providing regulation and safety and education to our kids in our communities as well.
So
and
we've got,
being able to address egregious racial disparities. You know, we can't forget about that part of it.
So we've got 70% of the people in the state of Wisconsin who appear to be in support of the legalization of marijuana. And we've got a majority party that seems to be ignoring that and responding to some other impetus, some other inclination. What is it that they're responding to? Who is it, or what is it behind the position that's being taken against it? Who are they responding to?
That's a really good question for the majority party. And I would encourage that, you know, it would be great if you could get them on a show.
Could that be the Tavern League? Could that be the liquor producers that may be opposed to it?
I don't know that I agree with the fact that anyone is putting dollars behind working against cannabis. It's that you know, people aren't even the majority party isn't even allowing us to have public hearings and discussions in the Capitol building about the policy. So, you know, I think really it's more about ideology. I think it's more about the fact that it doesn't match the tone that the majority party wants to be the song that they want to be singing here in the state of Wisconsin. And, you know, they're wrong. And things are going to be changing in Wisconsin pretty swiftly here, I believe. And with more fair maps, people's voices are going to matter even more. And it's vitally important that people don't give up on reaching out to their elected officials and talking about how we will be a safer community. And yeah, we should take that money and we should be investing it into mental health, addiction, education, infrastructure. There are a lot of ways we can make Wisconsin safer and more prosperous, and this is one of them.
Sandy?
Well, you know, my sense is that facts have to trump kind of the blind ideological position, and that when you say that we're safer, I think we it would be good to be able to lay some more factual basis behind that, because I think 70% of the people want this to happen. Now they need people to carry the case for them. I was an attorney for my professional life. It seems like this is the kind of situation where what's needed is people to carry that case for them and to make the case for them. Most of them, I think, have reached the decision that they think it's the right thing to have legalized because of their personal experience with marijuana, because just like alcohol during Prohibition, there are very few people who reach maturity in the state of Wisconsin who have not had experience with marijuana.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of information out there about the improved safety on communities with legalization. And we make a lot of those points in our office and, you know, meet with folks. And it's interesting watching the conversation changing with more law enforcement, understanding that with legalization of cannabis, their jobs actually, they can focus on the real wrongs and the ills in their communities. It's high time we legalize cannabis in Wisconsin.
Hey, Senator Agard, we're in agreement with you. Thank you very much. We got to get you back on a little bit later on. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Got to go to a break. We'll be right back.
Off the court. So how do we develop those things? By getting comfortable with a challenge. By cultivating the confidence necessary to overcome adversity in all forms. That's why I coach. That's my purpose. Every member of this team can lean on me, and I'll teach them how they can lean on themselves and each other.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Daytime highs approaching 83 today under mainly sunny skies. Winds out of the east, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows level off around 62 tonight, mainly cloudy skies. Cloudy skies with a few peaks of sun again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 81. Chance for scattered storms Sunday. Chance for scattered showers on Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 70 degrees.
Channel. It's the right show. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-9570. 2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host Sandy Williams. And Sandy, a lot to talk about. Just a lot to talk about today. And, you know, I want to go to the Ukraine and Russia war and the ominous sign, Sandy, that this thing is could start spinning really out of control with the fact that Ukraine is now able to attack homeland of Russia and do some damage, not major damage, but it is a sign that they have now decided, well, we're going to hit back. And so the carnage is now on Russian soil, and the Russian citizens are now in danger. I don't think Putin's going to play fair with that, do you?
Well, the whole thing is, you know, I just think we have such a misunderstanding and distorted view of Russia and the Russian feelings about Putin. Putin's grip on Russia has become more secure and less secure since the steps we took to isolate Russia
and the suffering that
and the suffering the Russian people are experiencing. Right. He's been able to convert that into anger by the Russian people at the outside forces, the West, who are creating this situation in Russia as far as his translation of it is concerned. Right. You know, the whole the uprising that he had with the Prigozhin and the Wagner group, we look at it and we see, well, that's a weakened Putin. There are the others who look at it and say, Putin's been very crafty, and he's basically being able to allow dissension amongst his cabinet, essentially. So long as they all swear their loyalty to him, he thinks it creates an atmosphere in Russia of the ability to have dissent by allowing this kind of stuff to go on. And there's some credibility to that view of things based on the way he's allowing Prigozhin to continue to be a player. So I just don't think we understand what the internals of Russia are and how they will be impacted. But I do think that the situation, the more desperate Russia becomes in terms of potentially losing the conflict, the more danger we have. You know, we had a spokesman for Putin a couple of days ago saying that nuclear weapons would necessarily be considered by Russia for tactical use if Ukraine is successful in its counteroffensive. So that's like declaring and then he said, so you people in the West, you ought to pray that this counteroffensive isn't effective, because otherwise we're going to deploy our nuclear weapons. So, you know, the whole thing is a big problem, is what it is. And it's apparently one that's going to persist until peace talks can be commenced. And based on the third-party conversations by the head of Brazil, by the head of Turkey, and elsewhere, it appears that neither side has actually indicated a true willingness to have talks at this point. So it doesn't appear that talks are in the offing to settle this thing. So, you know, we're going to have a long-term problem, long-term dispute, a long-term disruption of food flow in the world. It's a problem.
You know, Sandy, the fact that they can now, Ukraine and their drones can reach Russian territory and mete out damage to the citizens.
Well, in Moscow. I mean, apparently these are not heavy payload, explosive payload drones, but they're a bit like the V-2 rockets that the Nazis used against England, where they just sent rockets that had the potential to land anywhere and to create havoc and fear amongst those in London who were subject to potential.
Yeah, but Sandy, initially they couldn't do that.
Yeah, now they can.
Right.
And they also have naval drones, which they're using now against naval vessels further out into the Black Sea. So clearly Ukraine has upped the game in terms of its capacity to strike out at Russia.
With our assistance.
Well, I think, to be honest with you, because there haven't been any Russian claims that it's been with our assistance, that that so far at least these naval drones and the drones that they're sending as far as Moscow have nothing about them that smacks of U.S. product, okay? And so long as that's the case, that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. Well, you know, Sandy, I would think that Russia's not going to believe it anyway. They're going to believe what they want to believe. They've seen our involvement and engagement in other aspects with giving the weapons and those kinds of things. They're certainly not going to say, well,
representing.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. And Bill from Oconomowoc, this is that highbrow music that you were talking about. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams.
I even put my music one hat on then and figured out who it was.
Yeah, you got it right.
Yeah.
Let's do this, Sandy. When all these things have been going on with Donald Trump, and you and I have kind of stayed away from those kinds of things, but you can't stay away from this, right?
No.
You can't. Let me ask you as an attorney and who takes an oath, and when you hear people saying that the nation's legal system is crooked, and the jury system is not right. We can't trust the jury system in this country. That's a lot to say, right?
Well, that's really the beginning of the end in terms of democracy, really, because ultimately democracy has to be premised on the imposition of laws and the adherence to laws by everyone. The mark of our developed state has always been the fact that we have a rule of law and we abide by it. The rule of law is implemented through courts, and our court system is in every way aimed at being as dispassionate as possible in terms of its politicization. And so now, for people in high places, Lindsey Graham and others, people in high places to attack our judicial system is really to put at risk our whole democratic system. Because what do they want to replace? How do they want to generate a court system that they can trust? How will they change the current court system to become a court system that is more trustworthy? Everybody is subject to having a court decide something contrary to their interest. And that happens in civil cases. It happens in criminal cases. And people have to put up with the result. And yes, courts have made mistakes. Juries do make mistakes. But it's kind of the messiness of democracy, right? There have been plenty of quotes about how it's like sausage making, you know. Democracy is a messy process, but tell me a better one. Tell me what you want to replace it with that's going to work better in terms of protecting individual rights. I mean, I think this is a really dangerous and important watershed moment in American history, this whole situation right now, not just the indictment of Donald Trump, but the way that the people around the country are reacting to it and how they're reacting to our judicial system. And it's the reason I said months ago that Donald Trump's conduct, his reckless conduct, and his unwillingness to put the country ahead of himself is jeopardizing our democracy, because any president who forces the system to indict him and take him to trial for criminal conduct is jeopardizing the system. Because, yes, it's easy to label the pursuit of a criminal case against an ex-president as a political witch hunt. Of course, you can. It can always be made to smell that way. The question is whether the facts are consistent with that or not. And so I just think that the current situation, Richard Nixon, as abhorrent as I thought he was after the whole Watergate situation, did exactly the right thing as a patriotic American by essentially putting himself into self-imposed exile after a voluntary resignation from the presidency, as the result of how the prosecution of Richard Nixon for his crimes would have sullied our country.
You know, Sandy, very simplistic, but no man is against the law. It's bigger than the law, right?
Yeah.
I mean, no man is bigger than the law. And whatever you say or think in support of Donald Trump, let's say it's not Donald Trump, whoever it is, no one person
right
should ever be bigger than that. And what we've done here is we've kind of made this one guy, or he's made himself, bigger than all of that.
Well, he says, you know, I want Tommy to get punished too, so, you know, Hunter. So, yeah, I want Hunter Biden to be thoroughly, I want that whole case to be thoroughly evaluated too, because currently, in the current situation, it's very important that our judicial system demonstrate the fact, and our law system demonstrate the fact, that it's unbiased. And I think that that process is ongoing. You know, Donald Trump now says, why did you take so long to prosecute me? Because now it's in the middle of my campaign.
Yeah.
Well, it took so long because the American process is that people are essentially innocent until proven guilty, that cases need to be explored, evaluated, investigated. It's not an overnight process, particularly when it's not a crime of, for instance, murder. Right. So we've got crimes that are much more complex and require much more evaluation than the fact circumstance of a burglary or an assault. And it took time. That's the American process. That's in fact a good thing, not a bad thing.
So Sandy, you know, you hear that they're trying to rush and get this into the courts, because if they don't get it into the courts on time, there's a good chance the whole case is not going to be worth anything. Well, are they going to be able to put a full court press on getting it into the courts? Because if they don't and the elections come, this thing can just...
Well, that's the messiness, right? That's the problem with Donald Trump. He's willing to put our country into a constitutional crisis on his own behalf. And if this prosecution persists after he were to be elected president, we would then be even in a greater constitutional crisis situation. The presumption is that he will not, at that point, simply use his pardon power to get rid of the federal prosecutions. He'll have trouble if Georgia indicts him. He'll have trouble with that one, because that isn't subject to federal pardons,
right,
or federal, and same with the New York State situation. But
those are much less.
Yeah, but, you know, I think, you know, here we have an American system. We've appointed special counsel, and apparently the world out there wants to politicize the special counsel process. Some special counsel are to be trusted and believed. For instance, John Durham. We have callers who call in and want to support John Durham and his outcomes. He's a special counsel. But they don't want to support the outcome of Robert Mueller, a special counsel, or Jack Smith, now a special counsel, all of whom were appointed in a process of trying to depoliticize this whole concept of criminal investigations of those in political positions. And so how do people reach that judgment of who they're going to trust? Do they trust them because of who appointed them? Because that's basically the most political outlook. Or do they trust them because of the results that they report? Because that seems to be something that isn't consistent with following the facts either. So I think that what we've got right now is, in fact, a constitutional crisis. And it's a constitutional crisis created by an individual who puts himself above the terrible mess that our democracy is getting itself into as the result of the crisis. And the crisis is about a legal system dealing with reckless conduct of someone in a position of great power.
You know, Sandy, and this goes all the way down to the guy who has to go and he committed a crime, a property crime, and maybe it goes to a jury. So that guy can say, hey, this is all crooked. You know, if nobody can, you know, what I'm doing here, I can't believe the justice system, and I can't believe these people and the jury of my peers. I can't trust those people. Well, if that can happen on the highest level, that's going to, certainly all down the line. Right?
All down the line. And the notion that we would buy into the concept that a conspiracy could be being carried out now against Donald Trump that involves a grand jury in Georgia, prosecutor in Georgia, a secretary of state in Georgia, that involves a whole bunch of people who are in Trump's cabinet, his vice president, all of the people who are now going to be instrumental witnesses in this process, and the conduct, which is really uncontested, okay? And the notion that there is some kind of an establishment conspiracy that is crooked is beyond comprehension of how this conspiracy, where does it get hatched? Do they have Zoom meetings to discuss them? You know, no. You know, this is all the result of parallel action, parallel courts, parallel judicial proceedings, parallel fact findings. And it turns out that one guy, somebody who, before he became president, was involved in something like 3,500 litigations before, is now, you know, has conducted himself in such a way that all of this is happening. And, you know, it's like, it's unbelievable.
You know, Sandy, when you look at him and he says to everybody, well, I have my freedom of speech. This, and then they argue and debate and say this is a freedom of speech issue. He can say whatever it is he wants to say. And what they're looking for from a defense perspective from him, it can't be him saying these simplistic answers. I have a right to freedom of speech. I can say what I want to say. You know, I could say that these things should have been, you know, it was crooked and all those kind of things. And so I'm free to say those things. And that somehow it's that simplistic.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Bill Barr, smart guy, you know, we didn't.
His guy.
And it's his guy, yeah. Exactly. It was his guy. Yeah. Clearly, he's now disaffected. And it probably happened in that December 20 period when he was asked to do things that
right.
He didn't think he should do. But he analyzed it from a legal standpoint very well. Freedom of speech is unlimited. You can say what you want, but you can't do anything you want, okay? And you can't carry out actions in pursuit of a conspiracy to do something. That's not freedom of speech. As he said, every conspiracy involves speech. Conspiracies are people talking to one another about doing something. You know, every fraud involves speech. So the fact that speech is involved doesn't make it subject to the First Amendment necessarily. And so, you know, Donald Trump's got a simplistic mind about the law. One of the reasons he does is it's never been applied against him successfully to date, okay? He's skated through life, inheriting a huge amount of money.
Wasting it.
Yes, and you know, he'd have more money today if he'd simply put it in the stock market instead of trying to apply his business acumen to it, whatever that business acumen is. But here's a person who has yet to be held accountable and has gotten, I think, increasingly reckless in his conduct over the years as a result.
You know, Sandy, the historians will write about this time, and Trump has to lose this in order for our judicial system to ever be respected again, wouldn't you say?
I my hope was, and fear, well, I think we have a break, but my concern has always been that he has brought this to a head, forced an indictment.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That means Fridays with Sandy. Sandy, before we get off Donald Trump, let's say worst-case scenario for some of us, and maybe some of our listening audience thinks it's the best-case scenario. But let's say Donald Trump gets reelected president of the United States. He's already said he wants to change things where he doesn't just do another 4 years, that he can get a 4-8. I mean, this is the mindset of this guy. What is the long-term damage to our society, to our way of government, do you think that will happen? If Donald Trump,
well, you know, the second four-year term has always been one that's fraught with potential more extreme action by a president. He's not running for re-election. He is a lame duck, but he also knows that he can exercise his executive powers to the max, and he's not running. He's not worried about losing his next election, right? So he doesn't have to be accountable. So he will. He will be in a position to use his executive powers however he chooses to do so. And, for instance, in the tariff situation, I mean, I thought he wrought havoc with our foreign affairs and with our financial affairs with the tariff war he decided to initiate against China. And I think we're still feeling the implications and ramifications of that. But that's just one example. He's got all kinds of appointments he can make. He's got all kinds of executive actions he can take. He's already said that he will declare war essentially on the civil servants of Washington, because he wants to drain the swamp, as he would say. He wants to attack the deep state. All of that is fraught with destroying essentially the expertise of our government, because The civil servants are the people who actually know what they're doing in Washington. Now, some would say that they know what they're doing and they exploit that by then managing the government in the directions and ways they wish to. But the fact is that the people who know how to run our country in all of its day-to-day ways are the bureaucrats who are vulnerable then to being attacked by a president who is intent on essentially sinking the deep state.
Let's go to Ken from Sturgeon Bay. Good morning, Ken. You say what?
Good morning, gentlemen. I'm just curious, wasn't he initially supposed to have 34 counts? How does it go from 34 down to 30?
Does that really matter? Charges?
I don't know. To be honest with you, you know, indictments and counts are interesting matters, but trials frequently are much more confined in facts. And so I agree with Earl. I'm not sure it matters. We have either 30 or 34 counts of alleged criminal conduct, and so now we got to deal with it.
It doesn't matter if somebody charged you with 34 felony charges, and all of a sudden you go to court, and all of a sudden it's down to 4. So what, the other 32 are made up BS again?
No,
BS. Well, it's a fake witch hunt. The proof is right there. How do you go from 34 down to 30? Or 34 down to 4?
Well,
all I heard for the last 2 weeks was 34 felony charges, 34. And all of a sudden, now it's just down to 4. And actually, two of them mean exactly the same thing.
No, I don't think it's down to 4. But in any case, what you hear in the news and what you see in indictments are two different things, right? The news media is speculating, and the indictments are, I mean, the indictments, there was a superseding indictment, and it didn't go down to 4. They added 4, okay? So they added 4 to the prior indictment.
So, San, you know, he clearly states it's a witch hunt. And so that this is the issue that we're dealing with.
Well, I know, and to be honest with you, I don't have a problem with Ken from Sturgeon Bay for that. I have a problem with
Lindsey Graham.
With the ex-president putting us in the position of conduct, which apparently, clearly, based on a grand jury's conduct and an evaluation, based on the evaluation of different grand juries around the country, warrants potential criminal action. And, you know, Richard Nixon had the patriotism to back off and let someone else govern the country, realizing that the individual who governs the country is less important than the country itself.
You know, Sandy, again, he did this a couple years back. So you might say, okay, he did it a couple years back. Maybe, okay, we can overlook some of those things. Maybe. I'm talking about Donald Trump. Accused of...
Well, the January 6th, yes. A couple of years? Well, the fact is that criminal conduct, we don't follow this very well otherwise, but white-collar crime takes years to prosecute.
I know, but Sandy, he's running again. He's trying to get back into a position where he can do even more mischief. Right? I mean, isn't that the fear?
Well, my fear is that people like this put people like Ken and all of us into this position of arguing about whether it's a political witch hunt, whether we're a banana republic or a country of laws. And that's what troubles me, is that people who put themselves above the country and put the country at test when the individual who runs this country is far less important than the country itself.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.